Hi everyone, this is Jove. This is a new episode of Streaming Caffeine. I even have a special t-shirt.
Nice.
Print out. There's only 10 copies in the world, and I'm sure I will give you some of them. So we are in Current, and we're using this one of the very nice background. I'm inviting two co-founders from WarpStream, and feel free to do some intro and about yourself, also the project you're working on. Yeah.
Okay. You want to introduce us? I like that you did it earlier.
Yeah, so nice.
Yeah, so WarpStream is a Kafka-compatible data streaming platform that runs directly over S3. So there are no local disks to manage. It's a stateless agent that you deploy into your cloud account. And the, as I said, the Kafka producers and consumers talk to the agent and run, and the agent stores the data in S3. So there's no interzone bandwidth or partition rebalancing. There's no zookeeper or internal kraft thing for you to manage and go wrong.
And we leave some to Ricky.
Yeah,
no, this is good.
No, it's a big project, so I'm sure he'll have plenty of stuff left to say. We co-founded the company together about 5 months ago now.
Something
and
like that.
We're working on getting complete protocol compatibility with Apache Kafka.
Yes.
Anything to add? Nope. That's
no, all. It's a great explanation. Trying to make Kafka cheaper and easier to use, and just really lower the barrier to. We think if we can make streaming storage cheaper and easier for people to adopt, it'll kind of make the whole streaming ecosystem a little bit easier to grow. So
yeah, I think this is a more like common agreement that is Kafka is awesome, but it's expensive, right? Especially when you have more and more data there, have a long retention policy, all the stuff. So that's your primary problem to solve.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's like two classes of Kafka workloads in my view.
Mm-hmm.
There's like these really high volume use cases. That's kind of like the world we come from.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan and I used to work at Datadog, and we built this columnar store called Husky that Datadog uses to store all their logging data and telemetry data and event data. And in that scenario, the data volumes are so huge that it costs, I mean, operations are always a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the costs are really expensive, especially around interzone networking.
Okay.
And it becomes kind of prohibitive to stream large volumes of like telemetry data through Kafka.
Yep.
And then there's like these other set of workloads where people are doing like CDC with Debezium, or they're writing applications with like KStreams and Flink. And some of those are high volume, but a lot of them, the volumes are not that high. And the problem people usually run into is more just around the like operations of Kafka itself, and less around the cost of like interzone networking.
Interzone networking can be a surprisingly large cost of running Kafka if you're using it for a high throughput use case.
Yeah, you can never underestimate the cost of network, right?
Yeah.
Someone don't put that in the sheet, but actually it surprises you end of the month, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're paying sticker prices for most cloud vendors, and you're running a high throughput workload like a gigabyte per second, interzone networking is going to be about 80% of the total cost of ownership.
Sure.
And that, most people, they have no idea. They get the bill later and they find out, but
too late.
They don't know.
Well, sometimes they don't know, right? Because when you get the bill from AWS, it doesn't attribute the interzone network. It doesn't say like Kafka on the line item, right? You see this EC2 interzone networking thing. It could be anything, right?
Yeah.
But so it's really hard to understand.
You may find this like 6 months later.
Yeah. Exactly.
And also, actually, when I talk to some of my clients, I guess that's become one of the driving reasons for the multi-cloud support.
Yeah.
Right, they may have choose to GCP, for example, and if we operate on AWS, it'll immediately, that can be a huge amount of money I have to allocate for the networking.
Yeah.
So please support GCP.
Yeah.
The primary reason is the driving factor is network.
Oh, you mean because like Time Plus is in AWS and the Kafka cluster is in GCP? And, once you go cross-region, it's like out of control. the egress fees are, what is it, like 9 cents a gigabyte or something?
They even prefer the same AZ, that'd be easier, right? That'd be cheaper, no cost almost, right?
So if you stay in the same AZ, it's free, but it's really hard to do that with traditional Kafka because the data exists Well, okay, so what happens with like a traditional Apache Kafka setup is like when you write the data, 2/3 of the time you're mm-hmm. writing to a leader that's in like a different zone from mm-hmm. the producer, right? And then even once you reach that producer, that leader, you then have to replicate the data to two other to brokers in two other regions. That's where all the fees come. When you're reading it, you can use the follower fetch feature, but mm-hmm. you have to like configure the cluster, right? Okay. If you don't configure it, then you'll spend a lot more money on there too. But that's one of the problems that we try and solve with WarpStream, which is that you don't pay any fees for mm-hmm. networking between not just EC2, it's the same in GCP, but you don't pay any networking fees between compute nodes and object mm-hmm. storage.
Okay.
And so if you're using something like WarpStream, it doesn't matter what availability zone your producers and consumers are, mm-hmm. as long as they're in the same region, they can all stream, write, and read data with no networking fees.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the reason why Snowflake's business model works. Mm-hmm. They can store all of the data warehouse table data in S3 and do all of the processing by reading and writing to S3.
Okay.
And there's no interzone bandwidth for that. We're taking essentially the same approach where you deploy stateless compute that acts kind of like a proxy between your Kafka client and mm-hmm. S3.
Yeah, and the failure is anything that break will break, and our video will just break.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I noticed it was frozen, but I wanted to...
Anyway, I mean, I have the audio at least, so I'm not too worried about that. In the worst case, I just put the image in the video. Anyway, we can continue the talk. I mean, it's still recording for the audio side. I'm not sure about that. So, yeah, cool. So, and how the name coming from, the WarpStream? Sorry, it's a naive question.
I'm trying to think about how to explain this.
It's on recording, so be careful.
Yeah. No, it's not like a bad reason. Here, I'll give you like 1 second. And then,
okay, yeah.
Basically, before we... a long time ago, Ryan and I were trying to start a different company called Warptable. But where did Warptable come from? You just owned that domain and thought it was cool.
I just thought it was a cool name.
Yeah.
And I bought the domain.
Okay, why is it cool?
I don't know.
it's cheap enough and it's cool, right?
Yeah, the domain name was available and I thought it was a good enough name to get started. We were building a columnar store for observability data.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's why we joined Datadog.
Yeah.
And when we left, one of the names that I just thought, hey, what about WarpStream? Because it's the other end of the stream table duality thing. And the domain name was for sale, but it was not quite as cheap as warptable.com, which WarpStream I had to pay a little bit extra for.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, the name doesn't have any super extreme particular meaning behind it, but
we just thought it was cool because our last company was Warptable, so we're like Warpstream this time.
That's a company name, the Warptable.
We worked on it for a couple months and ended up we built a cool technical prototype, but then we ended up getting hired at Datadog to like build the real version of it, and that became a system called Husky.
Okay, yeah, I know that. Yeah, so cool. Nice. Yeah, sometimes it's a combination of like the availability of the domain name, right? And whether it sounds kind of cool enough or not stupid enough.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff. Well, how did Time Plus come around?
The same, right? I mean, we have a brainstorming, say something you want may not be available.
Yeah.
Okay. or available but super expensive, right?
So,
Even
we start from the IO, like timeplus.io.
Yeah.
And just like Confluent, even today it's Confluent.io. If you go to Confluent.com, sorry about Confluent, we are in their space, but if you go to Confluent.com, it's the other website.
Oh, it's not, oh really? Okay, well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but when you start from timeplus.io and it's the domain is cheap enough, and also we do want to build a new stuff, a new database with time as the first citizen, just like Splunk, but in a better way,
to
some degree. And by later on, we figured out the company, previous company called Time Plus Payroll System, just went bankrupt.
Okay.
Like a few weeks ago, and we contact them. Hey, sorry for your business, but are you selling your domain name? That's please.
That's perfect.
It's good timing.
Yeah. Did they sell it to you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
We also get those trademark too. So it's an interesting. It's a lot of like by luck, not really by design.
Okay. That's really cool.
So I mean, I listened to some of the podcasts with Hubert and others. So this is really a cool idea to have not just a cheaper version of Kafka, but also you might have better, an easier way to deploy. As the slogan mentioned, that is manage less, right? So Kafka become more and more complex, right? With all the keynote speech today, like all those KIP, it's like two-phase commit, all those stuff. So is that also one of your kind of a selling point? You guys can, I mean, anyone can deploy this easily or use your cloud version?
Yeah. I mean, I think ease of operations is one of the main value drivers, we think, for us. Mm-hmm. So like the current thing we have right now, we call it like BYOC, where we basically give you a Docker container. Mm-hmm. And you put the Docker container wherever you deploy Docker containers. You can put in ECS, Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. It's basically running like Nginx. Like you point it at an object store, you autoscale it on CPU. There's no other like the runbook for adding a node or removing a node is delete the pod or add the pod. Nice. There's nothing beyond that. But long term, we'd like to have. We think that makes sense for a lot of use cases, especially for like bigger companies and bigger workloads. But we're also really interested in having a completely like hosted, quote unquote, version.
Scale to zero, serverless, all the buzzwords people.
No, but like for
it's
real. Like,
yeah, actually. But real. It's the buzzwords, but we actually will make them real. Where
you are in a better position compared to other offering, right, to scale to zero in a real way.
like you'd be able to start a cluster by
instantaneously. Yeah.
By sending, you know, you connect a Kafka client and it will make the cluster for you on demand within a few milliseconds, waiting to provision resources behind the scenes.
Okay. I really like the way like Nikita at Neon talks about it, where he says like databases URL. Mm-hmm. We want to do the same thing with Kafka, where like there's an API or a button, you just hit it and you get a bootstrap URL.
Okay.
And you talk to that bootstrap URL and it'll let you scale from like 0 megabytes per second to like 100 megabytes per second and all the way back down again. And so I think if we can do that, we'll really have like reduced the barrier of entry to bringing Kafka into your architecture to like the minimal possible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the data is in object storage, right? S3 or GCS. I guess you guys probably can support Spot instance, but can you support like Lambda, those small serverless stuff?
It should work in theory. We haven't really tested it, and I think you'd have to do some funky stuff to like keep the Lambda alive for some period of time.
Yeah.
But people have deployed it to Fargate, for example, which is like Spot instance.
Yeah. We use Fargate too. So it's very nice. You don't have to worry about the details. Yeah. You never over-provision, right? It's so nice.
We run them on fly.io. I have a test cluster that runs in fly.io, and you can deploy it to multiple regions, and they all share a Cloudflare R2 bucket. I got it running on Railway a couple days ago. You can run the agents basically anywhere.
Okay.
They need access to an object storage bucket, and they need to be able to reach our cloud control plane, and those are the only two dependencies.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the? It's a spicy question. What kind of the hard problem ahead of you, right? I mean, besides the time and the money.
Besides all of the hard problems. It's a good question. I mean, like we don't support the full Kafka protocol yet, and there's a lot of stuff to build there. Mm-hmm. So
do you like the new direction they mentioned on the keynote today, that is simplify the Kafka API or protocol?
I think the simplified consumer group protocol.
Yeah.
Have you read the full kip for that yet?
I've read it a little bit. I think it will be a definite simplification for client library authors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think it will make Kafka itself any simpler.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It looks simpler.
But
all the code just gets pushed inside.
which is probably a good thing for
consumers, right? Publishing.
I think it's probably a good thing in general. And you can do some parts of the consumer group protocol, if they're running on the server, will finish faster. Like you can do the work that the consumer group protocol does faster if it runs on the server. There's less waiting, basically, mm-hmm. for the client. Where the consumer, when the protocol runs on the client today, you have to wait in a few situations for like the global synchronization barrier to occur. Whereas if you're running it on the server, it can complete a little faster.
Yeah.
The stuff that I am a lot more interested though, that was discussed today was the partitionless Kafka stuff. Because we also support the Kinesis protocol, internally, WarpStream is designed to be able to split and merge partitions.
Okay.
Because that's what Kinesis can do. And we can do that as well. It's not exposed in the Kafka protocol layer for us, but once Confluent, you know, proposes a kip for doing the partitionless Kafka stuff, we will finish it faster than them because we already support all of this stuff internally.
And you mentioned Kinesis. Actually, that's the first post I put on LinkedIn regarding when I read and try out documentation under the doc image. I'm surprised to learn you use both Kafka and Kinesis example. I'm not aware whether Kinesis API is public or it's just the other kind of.
I think we're the only non-AWS implementation of the Kinesis protocol.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not true. There's like someone who wrote, you know, like a JavaScript implementation for like testing.
Yeah, not as
not for production.
The only one that can be actually used in production. We did that one first for the reasons Ryan's saying, which is that we think the ability to split and merge shard partitions or shards is a really elegant feature. And so we wanted to start and make sure we supported that. Because it's really easy to build the Kafka protocol on top of that. You just like don't split the partitions.
Okay. But the API itself is like how to...
It's also an HTTP API, which is really nice.
From Kinesis, it's not really a secret, right?
What's not a secret?
I mean, have a server to pretend they are Kinesis, but if not, then you can add more shard or add more stream. That part, I didn't aware of other open source projects. They can kind of simulate Kinesis.
Yeah.
But that API is not really private API.
It's public. I mean, it's just an HTTP JSON. It's actually JSON.
It's much simpler than the Kafka protocol. Much simpler.
It's nice, too, because it's really easy to load balance because it's just HTTP.
Okay.
So, like, for example, with WarpStream, like, there are no load balancers for Kafka because of how the protocol works. It's extremely stateful. WarpStream, you can actually put behind a network load balancer, which is very convenient because you can do, like, TLS termination in the load balancer instead of in Kafka. And WarpStream can do that because any agent can write data for any partition, basically. Mm-hmm. But with like the Kinesis API, since it's HTTP, like you can literally just throw it behind like an AWS load balancer and get HTTPS termination, smooth load balancing, connection draining.
It's more cloud native, right?
So yeah, it's just a lot. It's a lot easier, and it fits into this idea of like the agents are stateless, right? You know, send the request to any agent and it'll work fine. So.
It's less efficient than the Kafka protocol because you have to base64 encode
HTTP
all of the messages. And it's JSON instead of a binary protocol. But it's the design of Kinesis is much more elegant, in my opinion, than Kafka. I think that it would work. I think if Kafka looked more like Kinesis, but with an efficient wire protocol, it would be a better system.
Yeah, but even some people complain about this Kafka API, everything is binary. So if we really want to put some either JSON or like Avro protobuf.
I think 95% of the Kafka protocol API could be HTTP plus JSON or gRPC for the admin stuff.
Them,
and then produce and fetch can be some micro-optimized thing. But like it doesn't need to be the whole protocol that's way. But you know, once you start with it that way, and then it evolves, and so I see how it ended up that way.
Okay. Do you agree the claim of like the Kafka API become a new HTTP API? That is, it is almost the industrial standard.
I think the Kafka protocol is becoming a standard in many ways. You know, there's I think Pulsar has an implementation, Kafka has an implementation, we have an implementation, Panda has an implementation. I think Microsoft has their own implementation. You know, the Conductor company, they actually have a gateway now that is essentially a proxy for Kafka. So it's like you have Nginx for Kafka, kind of.
Okay.
So I said earlier there are no proxies. Okay, there's one actually now. So I do think it is becoming a standard. And, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff we want to do, I think, that to make streaming easier that moves beyond the Kafka protocol.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you have to start there because that's just where everyone is, and if you speak the Kafka protocol, all the technologies can plug into it.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about your own UI management tools, yeah. Come on, all those stuff. Just leverage your
head. And just integrating with like things like Time Plus, right? And, and all these compute engines, they all know how to write to Kafka, they all know how to read from Kafka. So just to plug into the East ecosystem, you do have to know that stuff. So.
Yeah, and also as kind of a user, right? I mean, I'm always got. Feel like fascinating to like I send you a message, hey, this doesn't really work, at least doesn't work for me for the dog compose.
Yeah.
And you say, oh yeah, wait 5 minutes, I will push a new image for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's something you can only get from the stock communities and really know all the details.
Yeah. The Kafka protocol is a beast for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned a lot over the last few months building it and supporting it, and a lot of undocumented stuff too that you have to just go read the code and be like, okay, what does the actual implementation of Kafka do, because it doesn't match the documentation and stuff like that. So,
okay. Are you one of the Kafka committer, or do you want to like propose, hey, this doesn't make sense, please change it, or this doesn't follow the documentation?
No, I mean, the stuff that like doesn't follow the documentation, it's just like, there's like historical, like there were bugs in Kafka, and then to work around, and bugs in Kafka or clients, and to work around those bugs, certain hacks were introduced into the protocol, and like those aren't really documented in the official protocol spec, all the implementations of Kafka implement those hacks as well, because some of the clients
to fix bug, you need to use a new bug.
Yeah.
So there's not really something. It's not really something that can be changed.
Yeah,
at this point.
It's just like a historical artifact.
Yeah, it would be. The things that would fix it are probably the simplified consumer group protocol.
Okay.
That will fix the majority of the ones that we found so far. There's a lot of undocumented stuff in the consumer group protocol. Behavior, if you just read the protocol messages and a basic description of how the protocol works and try to implement it, you will not be compliant with actually what Apache Kafka does, because they're undocumented behaviors.
Just like any system that's been around for like 10 years.
And some of the behaviors are documented in the sense that they appear in some KIP that has a weird name that's not directly related to the thing that you're working on, or that's described in a GitHub issue for a client that is 5 years old. And the issue's closed now because they fixed it by, making an undocumented hack.
I guess the story that if someone worked in Oracle and, every single change, they were wrong,
all the time.
2 days kind of a test to run all the queries, and if you fix one thing, it may break others, so please don't fix it.
I've talked to some people that do. It's like, they're like, every small change results in like 100 test failures, and it's like a keep adding more if statements until all the tests pass.
That's interesting. And WarpStream is implemented in Go, right? Again, this can be a very boring or kind of naive question. Do you face any challenge? Or do you hit the limit of Go, or it's okay enough?
No. Ryan and I have been writing databases in Go for like over 6 years. So I think we know how to get the most out of it, I think. I actually think personally that Go is like, it hits almost like a perfect sweet spot for writing these types of heavily networked systems.
Yes.
The async story, the concurrency story, the scheduler, all the built-in libraries for interacting with like sockets and stuff, it's all like extremely good and efficient. The place where most people run into issues is around like garbage collection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Brian and I just know how to push it to its limits. It ends up like you have some code that ends up looking a little bit more like C++ than Go. Mm-hmm. To hide stuff from the garbage collector, to write your own allocators and stuff. But we still think it was the right choice, because you get, 90 to 95% of your code looks very idiomatic, and you have this dark 5%. It's just like, don't go there, we've gotten really good performance out of it. I mean, mostly, like, we're usually hitting the limits of like a network card on a VM in AWS before we're running out of CPU. There's just rate limits on how much networking you can do on a small VM, in AWS. And so you have to get a bigger VM with more cores, and so we usually hit the network limits before we hit the CPU limits, so it's not been a problem.
Yeah, because for example, like in our team, the 10 plus Proton is implemented in C++.
Yeah.
And we have extra layer about like more certain things, and the API layer, all the cloud stuff is in Go. Right?
Yeah.
And we have one engineer, not sure whether he's watching this episode. We need more people working on the database side. So he moved from the Go space to the C++ space.
Yeah.
And they complain a lot, hey, come on, the dependency management is so annoying. I like those decent design in Go.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes if you're really talking about CPU intensive stuff, maybe you might have to using C++ even more low level stuff. But
yeah.
Go in general is great, especially for the network stuff. Right?
And I mean, you can drop down as low as assembly in Go if you want to. It's not a great, not a fun time if you have to do that, but we've done it before.
Uh-huh.
In systems we've worked on, we've manually inline functions. We have our file cache uses off-heap memory. It just like uses mmap,
mm-hmm.
and so it just can store gigabytes of data, and the garbage collector can't see it. So there's a bunch of tricks if you kind of are experienced at writing this type of software in Go.
Oh, nice.
We have like a zero allocation protobuf on Marshaller and a bunch of stuff.
And you guys only have three so far, right? You mentioned in the podcast that maybe five or maybe onboarding next step.
Yeah, we got two more engineers joining in October.
And
we'll be seven by January.
The current offering is quite complete, right? You even have a UI and some command line stuff. I mean, anyway, it's. I mean, who built that UI stuff?
It's all server-side rendered HTML. So even the website is mostly Go.
Nice.
We just like write all the logic in Go, and then we render it into templates. It's both me and Ryan basically working on that UI. We've been doing this for a long time, and so I think we like writing databases. So I think we made a bunch of decisions early on. For example, like the fact that it uses S3, that's like a huge portion of the code base that we just don't have to write. Right,
mm-hmm.
we don't have to write any code for replication. We don't have to write any code for partition rebalancing. We don't have to write any code for topology changes. So I think there's just some design decisions we've made early on that have made it possible for us to move fast,
mm-hmm.
but there's still a lot to do. I mean, I wouldn't call it complete. It's there's still a lot more stuff to do. But we have done a lot in 5 months, but I think there's still a lot to do.
Yeah, just 5 months.
Yeah.
It's already a working system, and with good performance data and very nice stuff. Yeah, I tried briefly. It just works fine.
Yeah,
it's so easy, and I'm not really a Kafka administrator, but I'm confident that I can run something with the WarpStream.
That's the goal.
So we right now we support the basics of the protocol: produce, fetch, consumer groups,
mm-hmm.
and most of the administrative APIs for creating topics and
listing
the offset, like the stuff that you would need to write a basic application using Kafka. The things that we don't support yet are idempotent producer, exactly one semantics,
ACLs,
and that work is all in progress. And I think within the next few quarters we'll have a much more complete story around our support for those APIs. It's just a matter of writing the code now.
Okay.
We just have to go do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, this is the streaming has been there for a long time, right? 20 years, 30 years, I'm not sure. So if you look for certain paper, it's not a new idea, but with the rising of the Kafka API, a few other vendors become easy. We don't have to worry about those low-level stuff, as well as S3, right? So, I feel like this is the right time to have more streaming infra, processor, database, whatsoever.
Yeah.
But people still struggle a lot on the batch side.
Yeah.
So they may not realize how easy it is to move to the streaming, or how to balance, or how to get started. Right?
Yeah.
So I guess you guys focus a lot on those simplicity, nice community, to kind of do some hand-holding. You don't have to worry too much to get started. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what we want to do is basically like cost and difficulty in operations of Kafka should not be a barrier to new streaming workloads.
Yep.
And then I think things like time plus, and it adds that nice, like you can just write SQL and you don't have to program directly against the Kafka APIs because they are kind of low level.
Yep.
And so I think if we all do our job, it should be a lot easier for people to get into the streaming space.
Yeah, even today, like people still write assembly code, whatever. So I mean, there's a reason for people using very low-level stuff. But in many cases, you don't have to, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Cool. And talk about this conference. I mean, you guys just work on this head down for this five months, and more joining this as a participant. No booth yet, but yeah. I'm sure. Or may I ask that? Are you going to like join next one, be a sponsor, try to be a speaker?
I would definitely like to have a booth next year for sure.
Yeah.
I bet we'll have some interesting stuff to talk about, so maybe we'll submit some talks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this year was just, you know, we're such a new company. Mm-hmm. It didn't make sense. You know, we're still in developer preview. We're working with like early design partners and stuff. But a year from now, I think it'll be a really different story. So we'd love to participate more actively for sure.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And you guys are based in Bay Area or?
We're a fully remote company.
Okay.
Ryan's in Chicago. I'm in Tennessee. We got a bunch of people in Europe. Some people in France. Some people in Spain. We're kind of all over the place. Yeah. Time Plus is distributed too, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We don't have office. We have our CEO.
Yeah, I saw him in a co-working space, I think, when I was Zooming with him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
He's in Santa Barbara, right?
Yes. Sure. So again, it's you don't really have to be in office all the time, but yeah, it's good to make gathering sometimes.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Or even have decent conversation with customers if they really want to have some deep dive.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might use office in that way, but
yeah, we have a tiny co-working office in Chicago where we all kind of meet every once in a while, just to be in the same
room together.
Yeah, that's what we're shooting for, like once a quarter.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
How often do you guys get together?
We try to meet quarter basis.
Yeah.
If not, we have a lot of Zoom meetings. But I guess
you just gotta spend time in person sometimes. It just
it's different.
Yeah.
Or even don't talk about anything TDL. Just having a lot of a casual talk.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of pressure, to be honest, as a kind of work on stock companies.
Yeah.
And gathering together to figure out what is the common goals and lay out all the options. It's okay to have some argument, but to really want to figure out what's the best move at this stage.
Yeah, for sure, 100%.
Nice. We almost, at least we can keep going this, but I guess we might want to join other sessions or talk to a few other folks. But I'm so glad you guys joined this, and I feel like this is kind of rude to ask you to sit down and hear.
No, I'm not above sitting on the floor. I hope I never am.
I'm not sure what's next time I will have the kind of episode inviting a guest to sit on the flow, but I really enjoy it. Forgot to meet you guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Okay, cool. And check out Warpstream and try the Docker image deploy by yourself.
Yeah, we got a community Slack channel, so there's a link to it on our website. Come join it and talk to us there.
The website is warpstream.com, and there's a link to our Slack channel, and you can sign up for our email list there as well.
Yeah, click the button.
Time Plus 2.